Small Town Expectations. My name is Brandy Rose, here with my wonderful partner, Hales Bassing.
Hey.
We're here to bring you another small town story from a really fantastic dude. I'm stoked about this guy's story, and it's something that I've been thinking about for a while. I happened to see this person in a parking lot and said, dude, you need to get on the podcast.
That's how the magic happens.
That's how it happens. More about that guy in just a minute. First, we want to remind you to like and review this podcast wherever you're listening, whether it's on an Android device or your Apple iTunes podcast app. Don't forget to just scroll down just a little bit. Like, 5-star is, you know, the best thing. but also review it, because it just makes life easier for folks who are trying to find the podcast. There was a time where all you had to do was type in small town and this Small Town Expectations was popping up. But for some reason, you're having to type in more of expectations. It's expecting you to type in more.
You have very high expectations.
So please like and review the podcast. Also, follow us on all social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter as Small Town Expectations Podcast. Also, radbrandy.com. If you are having problems listening on any apps, or you find that obviously you're not having problems because you're listening to this episode, but if you know somebody
That's a good point.
Who's having a problem listening to an episode or to seeing photos or whatever, we post lots of photos on the website. You can go to radbrandy.com to see more pictures. And, you know, if you're having issues with your app, go to radbrandy.com. If you would like to be on this podcast because you have a story to tell, I promise you, you do, please email us at smalltownpodcast@yahoo.com. You're interested in being on the podcast, you're going to email us, you're going to let me know, and we're going to make it happen.
Or shoot us a message.
Shoot us a message on Facebook. Or Twitter, or Snapchat, or Instagram. You can let us know that you have a story to tell and that you want to be on the podcast. And we're going to make that happen, whether it's over the phone, you coming into our home, or us going to wherever you feel the most comfortable and the most confident.
Mm-hmm.
So make that happen. And there's been lots of stuff happening in Haley and I's life. It was just Haley's birthday. It was a crazy weekend. That's why this is getting out a day late.
It is a day late.
So we want to just make genuine apologies for that.
Yeah.
Because we know that you look forward to every other Sunday this episode dropping.
It's been crazy. Crazy weeks.
It was a crazy week. And it was cool to run into our guest today in the parking lot of his physical therapist's office. It was kind of a random thing happening. But it was kind of perfect and serendipitous.
Yeah.
And so for it to be getting out a day late, there's a lot of reasons why it's getting out a day late, but I don't think that it's bad. But we do want to apologize, because we try to be consistent with that, and we recognize that it might throw you flow.
Yep.
So please forgive us and enjoy the episode. But also, we want to just, you know, highlight a community mm-hmm. that happens. And this week, we thought that our friend community is kind of the one, right? Because there's so many things that happened in this last week that involve friends. Plus, our guest today, his story really is about people.
Yeah.
It's about community, period. So I did my first 5K this past Saturday.
And pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. But then I got asked by sweet, sweet Heather, Haley's sister. She said, Brandy, have you been training for this 5K? And that's pretty much the tone she had. And I was like, no, what's the problem? She was like, I did a 5K and I trained for 3 months. And then I started to get a little insecure about it. but it makes sense now, because still 3 days later, my muscles are screaming. Like, I'm so sore, and that's the only thing I can contribute it to, because I do not have the body of a runner.
That's funny. The coolest part, though, about the 5K is the community that was there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you remember our last episode, we had Amber on talking about love for Thad, and we were at that event, and it was so powerful to
touching.
See the people there, and
yeah.
people that we knew, and people that had nothing to do with Desert View or anything. They were just there as community members, supporting that family and supporting the cause and
supporting
just bringing awareness
families.
To mental illness and
yes.
and suicide awareness and everything that goes with it. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And what a great moment to come together and just sort of circle around families that have been directly affected by somebody completing suicide,
yeah.
Because it's heavy and it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just honored to be able to be there yeah. in those people's presence and to hear those stories.
Yeah.
It was really, really neat. It was a beautiful day. And my body is sore. but then, you know, more friend stuff, right? Amber has become our friend.
Yeah.
And I think I can honestly and genuinely say that. I think that she's somebody who is going to be a friend to us and for us for the rest of forever.
Yeah.
And I look forward to that friendship.
Me too.
So Sunday, though, Saturday was Haley's birthday. And mm-hmm. it was kind of a cool day. Haley's birthday is always a fun, filled, jam-packed, crazy time. And I love Haley's birthday. I love spending it with her. I love the days leading into it and the days after it. Because it's
stressful.
Just so, but it's really stressful. I'm not gonna lie. But it's special to you. Yeah. And I know how special it is to you. And so I try to support that and help you have the best days possible. So it was fun and it was full of friends and it was full of that community. We spent time out at the lake, swimming and kayaking and playing with the dogs and just being in conversation with people that we think are special.
Yeah.
And
I was telling one of the girls how cool it is that we're able to intertwine I feel like my friends are almost seasonal. Mm-hmm. And that sounds bad to say, but it's like, just that my birthday is a time that they could all come together. You know, my schoolwork friends and my summer theater friends and my in-between friends and your family. And just, it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. And everybody comes together.
Yeah.
It's like a big holiday. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's good. And so then just leading into more community, Chris and his story is about community. That's how I met Chris was
yeah.
through, a faith community. But he is somebody who I have just kind of sat back and watched and just heard little snippets. And this story is really incredible to hear where he's come from and where he's at now. His struggles, his journey, all of it is really, really cool. And it's just, you're going to sit there and go, huh? Seriously? What?
Real deal.
Real deal. And then I promise that while you're listening to Chris's story, you're going to think of a little 10-year-old or a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old.
Someone you know.
And maybe you don't even know them that well, but you look at them and you're like, that kid's on a journey. And that's really what we have to recognize in people is everyone's path is different. Everyone's story is different. Everyone's journey is different. But oftentimes, and we hope, right, that it leads to a place of understanding and a place of growth and a place of brilliance.
Yeah.
All of those things. And that's kind of Chris's story. He came through some crap, man. He came through some crap, but he doesn't even see it as that. I think he does a little bit, but sitting back and as somebody who works with small children sometimes who have been through some stuff, I think that I get to look at them with the lens that Chris has shared, you know?
Yeah.
And I get to not look at them and go, man, they got a hard path ahead. I get to look at them and go, like, they're going to be okay. And I've always done that. You know what I mean? I always have been very intentional about the children that I work with, the teenagers that I work with, knowing that they're going to be okay. And they're going to come out and they're going to be successful and all of those things. I genuinely stand firm on that. But Chris is that example that I get to have in my head now.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I necessarily had that example in my head.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that. Cool. And so what does your community of friends look like? Whether it's a birthday of friends or it's a community of people who have stood with you through some dark times and some struggles and just been on that journey and that path with you. What are your friends? Call them right now. Text them and tell them that you love them. And text them or call them and hang out with them. Spend a little time with your friends and share with them how much you appreciate that journey that they've been on with you. Please enjoy Chris Esch.
Don't forget, son, there is someone up above.
Hey everyone, This is my good friend, Chris Esch. I'm super stoked that he's sitting down with me. Say what's up, Chris.
Hey, everybody. I'm actually her great friend, Chris.
He's my great friend. We were going through, how was I going to say this? And I was like, you're my great friend. And then I was like, well, I'm going to say your good friend. And he's like, Brandy, I am your great friend.
Yeah, I'm great.
True.
Pretty cool.
It is true. So Chris, if you will just start off sharing with the folks how old you are.
I am mid-ancient. I'm 34 years old.
You know that people in their 40s and 50s are like,
they're ancient.
Dude, come on.
It's cool. When I get there, I'll probably think I'm ancient too. So right. It's good. I love it. I wouldn't go back to my 20s if I had the opportunity. My 30s have been way better than my
20s. I think the same thing.
Yeah.
I do. I think about, like, my sister, Alex, she just turned 22, and I'm like, man, when I was 22, I was a mess.
Dude, I had a lot of fun, but, like, as far as where I'm at in life and, like, I don't have to struggle as much. I struggle.
Yeah.
But not nearly as much as I did in my 20s.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't trade it. That's for sure.
No.
Life is much better.
And I think about what I was doing when I was 22 and like the job that I had, all of those things. And like just in reflection, right? And I'm like, ooh, I don't know that I would want to do that stuff
maybe
again.
Maybe for a day. Maybe for a weekend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I probably had a lot more fun on weekends when I was in my 20s.
Right.
But that's about as far as I'd take it.
Listen, though, your body and your...
Yeah, I would take that all day.
Yeah.
If I could have my 20-year-old body.
That's
especially
true.
Right now, being as broken as I am.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Yeah.
But also, like, if you were to go back and just spend one of those weekends in the body that you have now, your body's...
No, I wouldn't be able to handle it.
No.
I'd be hurting for certain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, again, like, I think about the stuff that I was doing, and I'm like, there's no way that I could function.
Yeah. No, it would be rough.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's a perfect intro into just kind of your journey and your story, because it's riddled with big weekends.
Yeah. No, I've definitely had a
few. Just to be cryptic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's start off talking about where you grew up and what your childhood was like.
Okay. Born in Guadalupe Medical Center, Carlsbad, New Mexico. 1984 was a beautiful winter day. Grew up there for a couple years, bouncing back and forth between there and Roswell. My mom was a waitress, a hard-headed waitress, and my dad was an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, my mom met my dad when she was pregnant with me, and then he kind of took over that role whenever I was born. Well, when he got out of prison. He went to prison basically the day I was born.
Yeah.
And so when he got out of prison, he was the male role model figure in my life. We moved around a lot when I was younger because he, come to find out, did have bipolar. He was undiagnosed for a really long time. So he'd lose jobs pretty frequently. And so we ended up moving to Texas. And we lived in Lubbock, Plainview, in the panhandle of Texas for a while. Saw some pretty gnarly tornadoes as a kid.
Yeah.
And then I want to say I was in first grade, maybe going into second. And my parents were both really big into drugs and drinking and partying a lot. Like, that was kind of our lifestyle as kids, is we ran amok, did whatever we wanted to do because our parents weren't really paying that much attention to us. And it was a different time. You didn't really have to pay that much attention to your kids.
Yeah.
And my mom owed the dope man $4,000. Didn't have the dope nor the $4,000. And so we ended up moving basically overnight. My little brother and my dad moved back to Carlsbad. And then the next day, me and my mom followed. And we lived there for...
So do you remember? Do you remember, like...
I remember moving.
Yeah, but like, you don't remember why what
nobody
happened.
They didn't tell us, you know what I mean?
So like, it wasn't scary?
No. Because, we just knew we were moving. It sucked because I had been there for a few years. I had friends there. I'd went to the same school.
Yeah.
I
think there's this idea, though, when something like that happens in a kid's life, it must be really scary.
Yeah.
And it must be super traumatizing for you.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it's not for some people, but for you in particular, you actually had no idea why.
No, we just knew that we were moving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We didn't really get, it's not like they sat us down and said, hey, we owe a lot of money to a bad guy and we've got to get out of here.
Right, it's
going to get bad. We just moved, and I think the way they explained it to us is my dad had a new job, and that's where we were going, was going to his new job. And it took, I mean, I was into my late teens, 20s before, you know, my dad really explained a lot of stuff that was going on when I was a kid. It didn't traumatize me. I mean, I wasn't traumatized. It sucked. I think it kind of gave me some security issues. And for a long time growing up, like I went to 13 different schools in 10 years.
Yeah.
Like I went to a lot of different schools. So I definitely had some security issues and just, you know, wanting something more consistent. We moved around a lot. So it was kind of that part of it. I was kind of like a nomad. Like I was cool. When I got older, I kept a bag that if I needed to go, I could. I didn't have to wait to be able to move. I packed light so I could move fast. So that kind of sucked. It was helpful though. I think it helped me to be able to adapt to pretty much any situation. So that was cool. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Then we moved back to
Crosby. And you became good at getting friends.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a huge part of your story, is you're really good at people, Chris.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, I was always the new kid. So to a certain degree, it kind of hindered me a little bit because I was busy trying to make friends instead of busy paying attention to school.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, I was pretty smart when I was a kid. Schoolwork was never really a problem for me. I was always a straight A student.
Yeah.
Probably up until 7th or 8th grade. And then I kind of said, screw it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even care anymore. I'm just going to have some fun. Like, I'm done with it, which really pissed my mom off because she didn't graduate high school and she was dead set that me and my brother were going to.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of sucked. So anyways, we moved back to Carlsbad. We were living with my Uncle Dano. You guys can't see it, but I'm doing air quotes. He wasn't my real uncle. He was just one of my dad's buddies. He was a real bad alcoholic. His house was just disgusting. I remember my mom and dad took the master bedroom. Dano slept on his recliner and we slept on the floor. And I remember numerous times in the middle of the night having cockroaches crawl across my face and wake me up in the middle of the night, freaking out. So that kind of sucked. Went to a really crappy school in the worst part of town. But somehow my mom always managed to like make holidays cool. You know what I mean? She's big on holidays. Christmases were always good. I remember one year me and my brother both got bikes, TVs, and just like huge, huge piles of stuff.
Yeah.
So it kind of, the lows were kind of offset by some of the highs. So that was nice, but they were still really big into partying, being drunk all the time, fighting, a lot of domestic violence. They'd get drunk and fight, punch each other. And then we got our own house, and I got into one of the best schools in town. And then I heard another kid tell the teacher, I got a new address. I was like, I got a new address too, teacher. And I was using my grandpa's address at the time. And so I gave him my address, and turns out I was in the wrong district. So I got kicked out of that school.
No.
My parents were mad. So yeah, man, lived there for a while. Going through it, like I said, both my parents liked to party pretty hard. All of our friends' parents were the same way. We were more or less, we were trailer trash. That's how it was. I loved it. Really close with all my friends when I was a kid.
But you didn't know any better.
No, that's what life was. It wasn't like I was all sad about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's how everybody I hung out with lived.
And you were a happy kid.
Yeah.
So, because, I mean, there's that, like, negative connotation when somebody says, like, that like somebody's trailer trash or something like that. You know what I mean? But you guys were happy and you were a good family.
Yeah.
There was some stuff.
Yeah, no, there was times of sorrow where, you know, I'd wake up. I remember one time after a Little League game, I came in. And before they left my game, they told me, hey, we're going to get you some McDonald's. And I get home. My dad and my brother are gone. And the house is just a mess. I mean, couches flipped over, tables flipped over. And right on the coffee table was my chicken nuggets, my fries, and my soda sitting there all perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole house was just a wreck. And my mom had a huge black eye. My dad, she had, I guess, went off on him and started hitting him. And he got her back. And you know, it was what it was. He was in a bad spot. The next couple of days after that were pretty crazy. Spent a couple more years living in Carlsbad. And then I want to say I was probably 8 or 9. I went to go see my grandparents in South Carolina, where they were from.
Mm-hmm.
My brother stayed here. And when I got out there, my mom checked into rehab. And apparently about a week or two after that, she was in rehab across the street from where we lived. Mm-hmm. So every day at rehab, she could look out her window, see my dad and all of her friends on the front porch getting trashed, having a good time. And
that could not have been helpful.
No, it wasn't. And so she decided to leave rehab, and she moved up here to Farmington. I ended up staying in South Carolina for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Split our whole family apart. My brother stayed with my dad. He went through some really rough stuff as a kid. I kind of missed some of that. And I stayed in South Carolina for about 3 years, which wasn't any easier. I mean, my grandparents were pretty old school and they both worked. So I was basically out in the middle of nowhere in the forest in South Carolina by myself. Mm-hmm. Went through some stuff out there. And then I went to move back. And I went with my uncle to Wyoming. And I was going to take a bus from Wyoming down to Farmington to move back in with my mom.
Also, you're like 11 years old at this time.
Yeah, I'm probably 10 or 11.
Right?
Yeah.
You're little, Chris.
Yeah, but like my dad told me, he said, son, I've considered you to be an adult since about the time you were 10.
Yeah.
Like you've been making your own decisions. You grew up way too fast. You didn't have a choice.
Yes.
I mean, there was times where we were homeless, living in a truck. There were times where we lived in an eggshell camper that couldn't have been more than maybe 14 feet long. There was times where we lived in huge houses, four bedroom houses. It was mountains and valleys when I was a kid, man. We would have great periods and then we would just have horrible periods.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is what it is. I could be sad about it. You know what I mean? And I could try and let it affect me and blame a lot of my stuff now on it, but that's in my past. I can't dwell on it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It is what it is. And so I went to move back to Wyoming, and my mom had met my stepdad, was living with him, and this dude, money. He had money. He was an oil field consultant. He made really good money, took care of his stuff, but he had his issues with alcohol too. And so it didn't help that my mom had her issues, and she would just, man, she could be the happiest drunk, but if something set her off, man, she would lose it and just freak. So it wasn't easy, you know what I mean, for him to live with her and both of them have their issues. So I went to move back and I called my mom, said, hey, I'm getting on the bus tomorrow. And she said, well, hey, your dad's up here. And they started talking about getting back together.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no way, dude. Like, you guys are firing gasoline. I'm not doing that. I don't care how old I am. You can't make me get on a bus in Wyoming. You're in New Mexico.
Right.
So I got on a bus from Wyoming to South Carolina. It was a 3-day bus trip by myself.
At 10 or 11.
Yeah. No money. I left with no money. Didn't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandma had to wire me money in South Dakota. I mean, I stopped in Indianapolis and ended up buying weed off this dude because he wouldn't leave me alone. He's like, hey, homie, you smoke weed? And I was like, yeah, man, cool. He's like, I'll buy this. And I was like, all right, bro, here's 10 bucks. Get away from me. And it wasn't even real weed. It was stupid. Yeah, man, by this time, I mean, I was full-fledged smoking weed on a pretty regular basis. I smoked cigarettes. Ed dabbled with a couple of other, you know, like pain pills and stuff like that. I got introduced to drugs pretty young.
Yeah.
I think I started smoking weed when I was like 7.
Yeah.
And started smoking cigarettes around the same time just because everyone I hung out with when I was 7 was like 13 or 14.
Right.
You know what I mean? The age that you're supposed to start experimenting with that stuff.
Sure.
And so I wanted to be cool. And so I started doing all of it too. So yeah, I get back to South Carolina, live there for maybe 3-4 more months, and then just got into some stuff. Me and my grandma kind of had a falling out. I moved back to Farmington and lived with my mom. I want to say I was probably 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And I ended up catching 2 felonies. Unarmed robbery, grand theft auto. And we basically just punked this kid for his 4-wheeler. Went on probation, got off of it, was just doing stuff that I knew was dumb,
mm-hmm.
but I was showing out for my friends, trying to be the cool kid. Literally when I was about 13 or 14, my dream was to grow up and be a drug kingpin.
Mm-hmm.
I idolized Pablo Escobar, Chapo, all those guys. I thought that was the coolest life.
Yeah.
Rap music was my thing, bumping Tupac all the time. Like I was going to grow up and be a hustler and a thug and a drug dealer, which is really stupid now that I look back. Got off probation, just kept messing up. 15, 16, got a job at Sonic. Was working nights. I wouldn't come home till like 1 or 2 in the morning. Me and my mom were fighting all the time because I got into high school, hit a kid with a baseball bat, got charged with assault with a deadly weapon. They dropped the charges. Then I, a couple weeks later, got in a fight with a kid, put him in the hospital, and they tried getting me for attempted manslaughter because I beat this kid with a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to the cops. They said started it.
And you were like 15 or so?
Yeah, 15, sophomore year.
Yeah.
So I just started high school. This is literally a week into high school this all started.
Yeah.
And so every day somebody was trying to fight me from school. I didn't want to fight. I was just trying to protect my friend when it all started. After about a year, I was like, dude, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm not doing good in school. The only class I was passing was ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly enough, I really like the structure.
But that's what, okay, yeah. So I just want to focus on that for a second because, you know, working with teenagers and working with young people, that's oftentimes what kids need is structure.
Really bad.
And when kids are getting in trouble and when they, you know, whatever, and they, like when I was a youth minister, right? One of the things that kids loved about coming was it was very like, and it was because they knew what to expect.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kids who felt like they had too much structure at home hated me for it.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah. The kids that don't, like, we crave that because we don't have to make those decisions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're 15 and your parents aren't like, you feel like you're an adult. And you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I swear you're not. I wish I could just slap some of these kids down and be like, dude, you don't want to be an adult.
Right.
Trust me, when you get to be one, you're going to want to be a kid. It's and you don't realize it, but you're trying so hard to be an adult, and it's not that fun.
Right.
It really is not. And, you know what I mean?
But you got pushed into that really young. Yeah. I mean, you had already seen a felony at 13.
Yeah.
Now you're getting charged with attempted manslaughter.
Yeah.
You're able to, you know, explain, and the investigation shows that you're actually not guilty of that. But you were an adult. I mean, for your stepdad to say that I considered you an adult at 10, I think of my nephew who's 8.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no way.
Yeah.
No way, man.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I had a little brother, and I kind of felt like I had to take care of him, which I did a horrible job of because I wasn't an adult. You know what
sure,
I mean? Like,
you're
I was just a kid trying
too.
To figure it out, too. I did the best I could, and fast forward a little bit, we've both turned out pretty damn good, all things considered.
Sure.
So, yeah, I dropped out of school that year, told my mom, like, hey, we got to stop this. Like, me and you hate each other right now, and I don't want to hate you. I love you.
Yeah.
You're my mom. You've got to let me go. So I moved down to Albuquerque with my dad, who I call Pops. And at that point, I was an adult. I dropped out of school, had a full-time job. I started doing meth, which was really stupid. But
How old were you in 15 or 16?
Probably about 16.
And you were doing meth?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
on a regular basis. It wasn't like...
That's hardcore.
And it wasn't like when I showed up, they had a meth pipe waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody was doing it, and they wouldn't let me do it. Like, they kept excluding me. I'm like, hey, dude, everybody else is up partying. I pay rent just like you guys do, you know what I mean? And they told me I was too young. And one of the chicks that was doing it with them was a week younger than I was. And I said, well, bull, dude. Like, this chick is a year or a week younger than I am. If I'm too young, then she's too young.
Right.
So obviously your math is wrong. I'm going to come in here and I'm going to do this, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was one of those things. I was just trying to be an adult, trying to be like everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, hey, if you guys can do it, I can do it too. Looking back, pretty dumb.
Mm-hmm.
So started doing that, pretty consistent basis. Spent the next couple years living in Las Lunas, just on the seat of my pants, had a girlfriend. She was 21, had two kids.
Mm-hmm.
We lived together. I mean, I really thought I had it figured out. I thought I knew what I was doing. I was going to be this kid's stepdad. And man.
And you were just a kid too.
Yeah.
You were 17.
Yeah, I had no clue. So luckily I figured out about the time I turned 18, this isn't working. Me and her broke up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. You know what I mean? It helped me. Okay, I'm going to leave. Moved back to Farmington, got my GED, started college, spent a year in college doing building trades, then got out that summer, got a job doing building trades, and was like, nah, I hate this. Like, they don't pay me nothing, I'm not gonna do this.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Las Lunas, spent the next year or the next summer just basically partying the whole time, tried to go back to college. They said, well, we need your tuition. And I said, well, it's Pell Grant, bro. Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, you got to sign up for that. And mm-hmm. I was like, shoot. I'm trying to not cuss just so you guys know. So you might hear me stumble over some words every once in a while. Took a job traveling the country selling magazines for about 3.5 years. Loved it. Hated it. Some days were awesome. Some days were horrible. Mm-hmm. Saw some of the highest highs I'd ever seen. Saw some of the lowest lows. Met some really cool people along the way. Got to see some really cool sights. Went to Niagara Falls for the 4th of July. Hung out at Lake Mead for the 4th of July before that. Partied in Mexico for Christmas. Like, got to see some really cool stuff. Been to Alaska twice. Mm-hmm.
Can I just make this correlation that there, now you're living literally like you're probably what 18 or 19 when this is happening, right? Yeah. So, like we talked about how when you were in Carlsbad and you're moving all over the place, you went to 13 different schools. Yeah. You're constantly the new kid. You're constantly the guy who's just like the life of the party and is going to get attention from people and be cool, right?
Yeah, helped me out a lot.
And now you're traveling from place to place, maybe living there for a month or so.
If that,
but still partying and finding those scenes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like that
every
is
day. That's knocking your, on a new door. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that's your being. That's who you are. And so I just think that there's a direct correlation to that personality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I was, it was something that I had to do, mm-hmm. In order to be able to enjoy my life, because either that or I'm going to sit there with no friends.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I had to learn to be able to laugh at myself, and I found it easier to make people laugh at me. And it helped because I got really good at doing what I did. And it was, like I said, there was highs and there was lows. There were some days where I'd get told no 5 times and I'd hate my life. Uh-huh. And I would just want to cry and didn't want to do it no more. And then there was days where everybody just told me yes.
Yeah.
And it was like, dude, I felt like I was on top of the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So fast forward 3.5 years. I think I was in Michigan, headed to Illinois, or Illinois headed to Michigan, one of the two. And my little brother calls me, and he had started kind of following in my shoes, which is why I say I didn't do a very good job.
Yeah.
Because he kind of followed in my shoes. I set a horrible example. Asked him, what are you doing, bro? And he's like, I'm just waiting for this dude to bring me my crack. And I was like, what, dude? Like, when did you start smoking crack? Like, I knew you were messing with coke. You know what I mean? He's like, it's whatever, dude. You need to get home. Mom's dying. Mm. I was like, what?
Like, she said like, that to that.
Like, she said she was sick. You know what I mean? But I didn't know she was dying. So, told my boss I got to go, dude. And I got on a bus and I rode home. Took me a couple days. When she got to the hospital, they gave her a 10% chance of making it through the night. Mm-hmm. She waited 5 days for me to get home so that she could tell me goodbye. And a little bit of a censorship warning here. When I saw her in the hospital, the only thing she could say was, this is fucked up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, no, I agree. And she looked horrible. She maybe weighed 90 pounds. She was yellow. Her liver was shutting down on her from drinking. And that was another fight that me and her had, is she was really, really bad with alcohol. And she had some demons that she just could not, she couldn't beat.
Yeah.
And eventually they took her.
Well, I think whenever we were talking before, you said something about when the doctors told her, hey, you have to stop. And she went, nah, thanks for the medicine, but I'm not going to take it. She went and picked up a fifth and was done.
Yeah. No, they told her, you can live on this medicine for another 10 years and enjoy your life. And she gave him back the pills and picked up her fifth of vodka and just kept chugging right along. And it was maybe a year later that she was gone.
Yeah.
And like
Which
I told you before,
it's a hard way to die.
No,
it is.
It was
That's painful.
One of the worst things I've ever seen was somebody go through liver shutdown. She said she wanted to go home and die at home. So we took her home and, we got there and she needed, albuterol. Mm-hmm. And so me and my little brother went to the pharmacy to pick this up. And I was like, dude, I need to get high right now. Like, this is rough. Mm-hmm. And so we went and picked up my brother's girlfriend and got some weed. We're sitting in the pharmacy drive-through waiting on and I looked at my brother and said, dude, how messed up is that going to be? Like, we get back and she's dead and we're sitting there smoking weed. And so I basically kicked my little brother's girlfriend out of the car right there. Like, you got to go, dude. We've got to go back to our house. Like, my mom's dying right now. We get back and my stepdad was standing out in front of the house. And he walked up and gave us both a hug and just said, she's gone. And we both just dropped to our knees instantly and started crying. You know what I mean? It's my mom. That's one person you can't ever replace. And as much turmoil and animosity that we had between each other, like, I loved her to death. And I'll never be able to replace that. You know what I mean?
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Your mom, so she protected you and you had a very spotty sort yeah. of like upbringing. Sure. Yeah. We can say that.
Yeah.
But you talked about how holidays were very important.
Yeah.
She took you to North Carolina mm-hmm. and to protect you and keep you safe.
Yeah.
I mean, like over and over and over again.
Yeah.
While she, you know, didn't have structure, didn't help you get through school, didn't do those things that, you know, society says parents are supposed to do. She did do things for you.
Yeah.
And I think, Chris, I think that very last thing that she did for you was she said, this is it. You gotta go.
Yeah.
And that was it. You yeah. know what I mean? Because you and your brother could have been there when she took her last breath. And
yeah.
like, that's a whole different story. Right. Yeah. And she, there was something inside of her that said, like, my boy's gotta go.
Yeah.
Like, again, like that's that last form of protection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it was it was crazy. You know what I mean? Like it sucked, and it definitely sent me and my brother both on a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But she told us when my little brother was 13. When my little brother turned 18, she was done,
uh-huh.
and she was out, and she called it. My little brother was 18 years old in 6 months, and she died.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like you never prepare for that. You can't, even when you know you won't be able to prepare for it. So yeah, she passed away. I remember drinking almost a half gallon of Jack Daniels and didn't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like it was, the pain was still there. I thought I could drink it away. I couldn't. So yeah, she passed away. We said goodbye, but I still harbored a lot of guilt
because
mm-hmm. I felt like I'd abandoned her when she probably needed me the most. I felt like I probably could have done more to help her. And I harbored a lot of anger towards her because I felt like she abandoned us.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm 21 years old. Like, I'm not ready to do this on my own. Even though I had been for years, you know what I mean? Like, it was a whole new, like, hey, there's nobody left. Because I don't know who my dad is. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got pops and I've got my stepdad, Mark. But I don't know who my biological dad is, you know what I mean? So I literally felt really alone. Plus, I felt like I had my little brother that I have to watch out for now. And I am not equipped to do that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, I tried, but I, once again, was a horrible role model. I mean, I was smoking crack with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was smoking meth with the kid. Like, that's not something you do for somebody you're trying to protect and show, but I at least knew he was safe because he was with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I hate that excuse. Well, he's at home, so I know he's safe. No, you're smoking meth with him, bro. He's not safe.
Yeah.
You're not safe. So we did that. We moved down to Albuquerque and we partied and flip-flopped house to house to house. Lived in hotels down there, and just for years, man, it was probably 2-3 years, we did horrible. My little brother came to the light a little bit sooner than I did, moved back up here, met his wife, got engaged, got a good job working for a company, making decent money as a gas compressor technician.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting really bad down there, like I was fighting a lot. I pulled over 2 times in the middle of Montgomery within a month. Got out of my car at a traffic stop, ready to fight somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stupid stuff. Like, and I finally snapped, like, dude, you're going to end up in prison or dead. Somebody's mm-hmm. going to pull a gun on you or shoot you, or the cops are going to come and take you to jail.
Yeah.
And so my little brother told me, come up here, I'll help you get a job. And I came back, and within 4 days, wrecked his fiance's car into a curb doing about 40 miles an hour head on.
Hammered. Not because you, yeah, I was going to say.
I was hammered.
You weren't like, you know, straight-laced just coming from, you know.
And he had told me, like, hey, if you're drinking, bro, just stay where you're at. I don't care. I don't need the car. Nah, I'll be home, man. And stupid. Got arrested for that. That was probably a real turning point in my life. Ended up going to rehab.
I kind of like this story a lot because so you told me that whenever you were getting arrested, you had finagled your phone and you had your brother on the phone and you were just like, tell him that I stole my car.
Yeah, nah. we took off. We hit the curb and I looked at my friend. I was like, what's wrong with the car? And he's like, you blew out all the tires. And I was like, well, grab the spare. And he's like, bro, all your tires are blown out. I was like, all right, well, let's go get Jeremy. And so me and him hopped out of the car, walked around the corner. I got almost to Ricketts from the Carpenters Union Hall and realized I didn't have my phone, which, I mean, I have to have my phone.
Yeah.
So I turned around to go back to the car, get my phone, and made it damn near back to the same spot I had made it before. And like four cops show up. And they're like, hey, did you have an accident? I was like, no, man, just a flat tire. We're good, bud. Have a good night. Kept trying to walk. They're like, no. Come talk to us. And so they ended up taking me back to the car. It was smashed.
And you're wasted, yeah, by the way.
I mean, I drank 2/5 of Patron.
Yeah.
Like, I was gone. Mm-hmm. Amazingly, I remember most of it. I blew a .28 over 3 times the legal limit. And that was a couple hours after I quit drinking.
Yeah.
Couldn't perform any field sobriety tests. Kept messing with them on the blow test. They put me in the car, and like I said before, it's probably a miracle that the cops arrested me that night, because if my little brother had gotten a hold of me, my little brother's a big dude. He's like 6'1", 195 pounds, big dude.
And you are not that tall.
No, and we could fight. Like, if I was sober, I could fight him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At least hang with him, but if I drunk, he would have wrecked me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd probably been in the hospital. I would have beat the brakes off me.
Mm.
So luckily they arrested me. He shows up. And I was handcuffed, but I got my phone out of my pocket and called him. And I'm yelling at him, just tell him I stole it. I'm so sorry. Just tell him I stole it. And he's like, you're an idiot. I'm going to kill you. And he's standing right outside the car. The cops can see me. You know what I mean? Like, it was just stupid. Anyways, got out of jail, went to counseling, and had to set up counseling, do an assessment, and I lied on it. And just said, hey, you know, like, I've dabbled with, you know, I've messed around, but I don't do it all the time. Come to find out, the counselor that I was seeing for my assessment has known me since I was probably 13 when I was on probation the first time, knew me intimately. Like, yeah. One of my good friends had seen me grow up, knew that I was a good kid, just made horrible decisions. Walked in there and I looked at him, I was like, oh, shit. I didn't know you were doing this. Yeah. He's like, yeah. I said, well, you can throw that piece of paper away. He's like, yeah, because you lied all the way through it. I was like, yeah, I didn't know I was talking to you. I thought I could lie my way through it. He's like, no. So we sat down, and he was really cool. You know, asked me how things had been, asked how I'd been since my mom had passed. We went through everything. And I asked him, I said, hey, dude, is there any way, like, you can make a recommendation I get on a scram bracelet so I don't have to go to jail? I can keep working and stuff. And he says, no. No, I can't. Judge Lease won't do that anyways. He's sending everybody to jail. What I can do is I can recommend that you go to rehab, and I really think you should. I think it'd be good for you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, I don't want to go to rehab. Like, that sounds horrible. But I weighed my options. The 28-day program through the city, you have to wear county oranges, boat shoes, and you can't smoke, and you get jail food that's left over from the jail. At rehab, you get home-cooked meals every day. You can smoke. You wear your own clothes. You're free to walk around. It's not jail. I said, all right, let's go to rehab then, yeah, huh? Sounds great to me. Went to rehab when I first got there. I'll never forget it, because this is where my faith really took a turn. And I started my relationship with God. Mm-hmm. I had always believed in God. Didn't really grow up real religious. Didn't really grow up in church. Every once in a while, my aunt would take us. But a dude asked me, he says, hey, do you believe in God? And I said, well, yeah. You know what I mean? Obviously, this isn't an accident. We're not just here by coincidence. Mm-hmm. He says, well, do you have a relationship? And I said, nah, bro, you're crazy. Like, I'm a heathen. You know what I mean? Like, I don't deserve a relationship with God. Like, there's no way that doing the things I do, I should have a relationship with God. And he says, bro, you're not going to quit doing the things you do until you get that relationship. And I really sat and pondered on that and had to make a decision, like, am I happy with the way that I'm living? Is this really what I want? Like, and I finally said, no, this isn't. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be successful. I want to have a good life. I want to get married and have kids. I'm not going to be able to do that doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that night I broke down in the shower and I started praying. And I asked God to come, just be with me. You know what I mean? Like, talk to me, dude. Help me figure this out. Like, walk with me through this. I remember Footprints. Those are the times I carried you. And I was like, dude, carry me. Like, my shoulders are tired. My legs hurt. Like, carry me for a little bit. And that night I prayed to him. I didn't even pray to him. I was just like, I'd really like to see this girl that I had met. She was a good friend of mine. I just wanted to let her know, hey, I'm doing good. Mm-hmm. I'm all right.
I miss you. I wish I could, and I wish, like, dude, how could I get a letter to this chick? And I just couldn't figure it out. Went to sleep. Next morning, walked out smoking my last cigarettes, and they're like, damn, this is gonna suck. I don't know how to get cigarettes in here.
And you've been smoking since you were 7
yeah.
or 8, right?
Yeah, it's not like something I'm just gonna stop. Oh, well, I don't have any. Like, right. I'm gonna fiend for it.
Yeah.
And I look over, and this chick's pulling up. And 5 packs of cigarettes for me. Mm-hmm. She knew what I smoked, brought me a pack of smokes, a letter saying, hey, I'm doing well. I hope you're doing well. This is my address if you want to contact me. Like, I'll see you when you get out. Mm-hmm. If you need anything, let me know. And it was at that moment I looked straight up to the sky and I said, all right, dude.
All right. Cigarettes.
I'm sold. That's what sold me. Right? You know what I mean? Like, it,
yes.
And everybody's got a different story. But that was my sign. Like, hey, I'm listening.
Yes.
And, you know, man, it was one of those things. And I kind of get emotional over it because it was a turning point in my life to where God does listen to me.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I felt like, and even now, sometimes I still feel this way. Like I pray and it feels like I'm getting a voicemail, like nobody's home mm-hmm. and I'm just getting a voicemail. That day he picked the phone up and told me, here I am. And, it was an awesome feeling. And so that kind of changed the way I looked at things. I took rehab seriously. I started praying on a regular basis. I got into the Bible. I started reading some of it. And it's not like everything changed for me overnight and I was fixed. And no, man, I still had a lot of stuff to work through. Mm. I still had a lot of stumbling to do. And I stumble every day.
Yeah.
I mean, this is 10 years removed and I'm still stumbling. But I can see a light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is, but I'm gonna keep following it.
Yeah.
Till it goes out. You know what I mean? So I got out of rehab, still pretty crazy. Met this girl through Alcoholics Anonymous. She was crazy. we hooked up a couple times. Supposedly she was pregnant. I got a house, moved her in. I'm gonna take care of this baby. Knowing full well I did not love this girl. Shouldn't have been involved with them in the first place.
Yeah.
And then she had a miscarriage and I bounced because I did not want to be with this chick.
Yeah.
And so broke it off with her, met another girl, and I ended up moving in with her for about a year. Real good girl. Still love her to this day. She never did anything wrong. Just wasn't a good fit for me. Mm-hmm. I went after her cause I thought she was pretty. We didn't click. You know what I mean? Not the way that we should have.
Yeah.
And then as things were falling out with her, I met my wife and fell madly in love with her. She did not fall madly in love with me, right. Which was an issue. And that's why it's so cool now because I know that I worked my ass off
mm-hmm.
in order to win her over and to make her love me. It was a forced love, I'm sure, but she'll tell you to this day that nobody's ever loved her the way that I have, and she'll never love anybody the way that she loves me.
Yeah.
So we went through some struggles. We were together for, she wouldn't tell anybody we were together. She told her mom I was her friend. Her grandma thought that I was into dudes
mm-hmm.
whenever she met me.
Oh, good, yeah.
And so, yeah, that was cool. Like, no, I'm actually into your granddaughter, but whatever. Like, hey, I'll give you a hug. About a year went by and we broke it off and I was devastated. Didn't let anybody really know that other than her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, other people knew that. And I was writing hip hop at the time. I'd been doing a lot of hip hop lyricism, performing, recording, doing shows. And a lot of the songs that I wrote were from the feelings that I was experiencing. And so, yeah, she was a big part of my music at that point.
How old are you, first of all? And also, you're sober during that time, right?
I'm off drugs.
So, okay.
I drank, you know what I mean? And there were times where I drank too much.
So you're clean?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not doing any drugs. I haven't done any drugs in maybe once or twice. Maybe a little cocaine here and there over the past 10 years.
Okay.
Once or twice, but other than that, nothing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I've smoked weed.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't consider that a drug. I have to quit for my job now, so I don't anymore, but you know, I dabbled. I was clean. I was a totally different person and I didn't drink every day.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I'd drink when we'd go do shows mm-hmm. or on a weekend, but it wasn't like I was waking up at 7 in the morning having shower beers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of split up for about 7-8 months. She was seeing another dude. I was seeing other chicks. When we got back together, she was pregnant. And that was a really rough time for both of us because we didn't know if it was mine or his.
Yeah.
And I handled it. I'm really disappointed in myself for the way that I handled it.
Yeah.
I had two men in my life step up and raise a kid that wasn't theirs. My pops and my stepdad both stepped up knowing damn well I wasn't theirs, mm-hmm. and were a father to me. And whenever faced with that situation, I cowered.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. We talked about possibly having an abortion. And to this day, like when people tell me I have no room to talk on that subject, mm-hmm. like I get it. I get the whole argument, but I've been through it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really do have part of a story. Like I can tell you what it feels like from the male position to have to make that decision with somebody you love.
Yeah.
And it's horrible.
Yeah.
Like I stayed up nights just like, God is going to punish me for this. And when we got pregnant with my son, like I was scared that this is going to be my punishment. Like this isn't going to go through. And I prayed for my son. Literally, I laid in bed one night and told God, hey, I think I'm ready to be a father.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd be a good one. And a month later, we were pregnant.
Yeah.
Having a baby.
And just to set some thoughts straight, the pregnancy that
ended up being ectopic.
Yeah.
So she had a tubal pregnancy. We talked about it. We hadn't went in for the procedure.
For the abortion.
Yeah. We hadn't went in for it. It was a conversation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a conversation we had.
Mm-hmm.
And just the conversation made me feel bad because I know God's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I know he knows my thoughts.
Sure.
And so like, just to think that, like I felt horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so she ended up having an ectopic pregnancy. It almost killed her. It was really, really scary.
Yeah.
And it hurt both of us for a long time. We both had to grieve that loss, had to deal with what we had went through, and it was hard. It did help us grow together, I feel like, but it was hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At first, it wasn't either one of us were in our own space. We didn't handle it as a couple. We handled it individually,
mm-hmm.
and then we kind of handled it as a couple. So then we were together. She moved in with me and I told her, you know what I mean? Like there's nothing you can do that'll ever change my love for you, period. Mm-hmm. I don't care what happens. Like this is forever. And I asked her to marry me on her, I think it was her 20th birthday. Maybe no, it was like her 22nd or 23rd. Anyways, I asked her to marry me. And when we had split up, I really started reading some books, The Purpose Driven Life,
mm-hmm.
started
Rick
looking,
Warren.
Yeah, started looking for a church home,
mm-hmm.
like really tried getting into it. And, I went and asked her to marry me at Six Graves where I used to go and pray that she would come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just told her, you know, I used to pray that this would work out right here. And so I figured it'd be a good spot to ask you to be with me for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, year and a half later, we got married. We had our son. And this year we will be celebrating our 5th anniversary. It's kind of a milestone for us. It's a milestone for me for sure.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
like when I was real young, I didn't think I'd ever get married or have kids.
Yeah.
And so to be where I'm at now, it's crazy. Yeah. Like to know, like I've got a good job, a beautiful wife who I love dearly, a beautiful child that, is my world.
Mm-hmm.
And to look back 10 years ago, who I was, like, I was real insecure, didn't think I was man enough to really be in a relationship with somebody, that every other dude that she looked at was better than me in every aspect. Like I couldn't provide, I couldn't do this. And so I've grown a lot because of her
mm-hmm.
helping me and telling me that I am good enough and telling me that I deserve this. And I still don't. Like, I don't for a second believe that I deserve any of this. I am blessed
mm-hmm.
Beyond anything that I deserve. And it's only because, for some reason, God feels like I deserve it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't. He does. I'll take it. I'm not going to hand it back. I'm going to, you know, hold on as long as I can.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I have changed a lot. I feel now like I am a role model. And I think it has a lot to do with where I came from. Like, where I came from to where I am. Like, if I had kept on the track, and I should be in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I should be dead. I should be homeless. I should be living on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And cracked out of my mind. So should my little brother. Like, both of us came from a horrible situation. Not that our parents didn't love us. It just, where we came from, it wasn't great. You know what I mean? It wasn't easy. So where we're at now, like, my brother's doing great. Makes good money, has 3 kids,
mm-hmm.
beautiful wife. I mean, he's still got his issues that he deals with. I still have mine that I deal with. Yeah. I am far from perfect, but I am doing way better than I should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's no other explanation for it than God has guided me to where I'm at.
Yeah.
God has slapped me a few times to get me where I'm at. You know what I mean? And he's had to smack me. Recently, we just ran a pretty horrific accident where we rode a moped into a four-wheeler head-on. And I broke 3 out of my 4 limbs. Was airlifted to the hospital and probably should have died.
Well, I've seen the pictures and I'm telling you, it's freaky.
Yeah.
It's freaky, freaky. And I'm looking at your arm right now where the picture that I saw, I literally could see your bone. I mean, your forearm was literally
sliced
open, like,
you know, stretched. What I mean? Yeah. Like somebody had taken a protractor and just opened it up. Yes,
exactly. And I'm looking at it now and it's healed. Yeah. Like you're moving your fingers. You know what I mean? All those things. I can, like, there's little scabs, but the scar isn't even gnarly. I mean, it's pretty cool, but it's not like crazy town.
Yeah.
Chris, like that's amazing.
Yeah. No. And honestly, that accident, all through it, all I could see is God. It was weird. Like 10 years ago, I would have been, oh, this isn't fair. And oh, this is so stupid. And I'd just be negative. I guarantee I would be if this had happened to me 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And all I've been able to say since it happened is how blessed I am, because I should have died. I should be brain dead. I should have lost a limb.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like no head injuries.
No helmets.
Yeah.
And we hit each other. He was probably doing 30 or 35. I was doing probably 20 head on.
Mm-hmm.
Like I shouldn't be talking to you right now. I should be a vegetable in a hospital.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not. God was there. God made my friends camp in a spot where the helicopter could land right at camp.
Yeah.
Where we had cell phone service. Where they were going to camp, no cell phone service.
Yeah.
Helicopter would have had to land 5 miles away and drive me to the helicopter. Or airlift me out of there with a basket. And if you've watched Facebook lately, everybody saw what happened in Arizona with the lady on the twirly thing.
Oh my gosh.
I don't want
to
do that.
You cannot bring that video up. Dude. Now people have to go Google that video. Man. That was scary.
Dude, that would have been nuts.
Yeah.
I'd be so, I'd have sued. I'd have been so mad. No, sir. But like everything's worked out well. The church has helped us out a tremendous amount. It has shown me, it has humbled me.
Mm-hmm.
It has shown me how many people love me. It has showed me how to count on other people to help take care of me when I can't take care of myself. It has made my wife and mine relationship grow closer, if that's possible. I know someday she probably wants to kill me, but it's gone really well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm recovering well. She's recovering well. We're good. I mean, God has sprinkled himself throughout my life and shown me that he is there. And I'm thankful for that. Even in times when I don't believe he is, he is.
I think that we can, for your life in general, we can play the what if game all day long.
Yeah.
What if your counselor at Cottonwood hadn't been the counselor that you had when you were 13?
Yeah.
He would have believed everything you said on that paper, but that man knew better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
exactly.
And I think that had just that what if moment, right? That's the one that just keeps replaying in my head.
My whole life could have been different.
Yeah. I think that to say that like God has been sprinkled throughout is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
But it's significant.
It's very significant. For somebody who didn't grow up religiously,
mm-hmm.
who wasn't raised on God, who had to find my faith through fire, it's cool. Cause you know what I mean? Some people, everybody's got a different walk. Everybody's got a different journey. Not everybody believes. Some people do. Some people grew up in the church and that's all they know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people like me that like literally there was a point in my life where the only thing I had was faith
mm-hmm.
because I didn't have anything else. I didn't have a house. I didn't have a car. I had the shoes on my feet and the shirt on my back and my faith that God would get me through it. And he has. Mm-hmm. Every single time. And a lot of people.
But you had to do hard work.
Yeah.
So, because sometimes there's this mentality that, like, God's going to bring you through. And no, so you're just going to chill and wait. You have to put the work
yes.
in.
Yes. And I hate that let go and let God. There are things you have to do that with. Mm-hmm. There are. 100%. You have to let go and let God do his part. But you have to do your part.
You have to bust your ass, man.
Yeah. You can't just sit around and, like, blessings are going to fall in your lap.
No, that's
you know what
not
I mean?
Real. Yeah.
Like, you can't just, you have to go and interview for these jobs. You have to tell them, hey, I'm the dude for this job or I'm the chick for this job. You're going to give it to me. When I got my job that I have now, and it's a great job, I make really good money and I don't work nearly as hard as I probably should have to. Like, I've done a lot worse for a lot less money.
Yeah.
And I showed up and I told them, I want this job. I'm really good. I'm smart. I can learn anything you can teach me. And they laid me off 3 months later at the end of my temp period, the day before I was supposed to get hired on full time. They let me go a week before Thanksgiving. My son was almost a year old. It was his first Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I've got to figure all this out. Like, how am I going to get my kid presents? Like, I'm freaking out. And I stopped. I said, no, God got me here. He'll get me wherever I need to go. Mm-hmm. If this is where I'm supposed to be, then I will. And a friend gave me a job a week later. I got Thanksgiving off. I got paid for it. Mm-hmm. I got Christmas off. I got paid for it. It wasn't as much as I was making, but it was more than nothing. That was for damn sure. And it was a blessing. And I showed up every week at that job. And I told them, I want my job back. If the only reason you're letting me go is because of budget, then I want my job back when the budget renews. Mm-hmm. And, oh, yeah, we'll get you. We'll get you. And finally, I showed up. I showed up every week and I called him every week and told him, I want my job. Is it ready? Is it ready? I want my job. Mm-hmm. Finally, I told him, hey, dude, you're either going to have to give me a job or you're going to have to give me a restraining order. But one way or another, I'm either going to work here or you're going to get tired of seeing me.
Yeah.
I'm going to be here every week until you hire me. And 2 weeks later, he gave me my job back.
That's cool.
Like, you have to work for it.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to just be handed to you on a silver platter. And if it does, hey, good for you. You know what I mean? I'm not mad at you for that. Cool. Some of it, most everybody though, you have to work for it.
And you've busted your ass in your marriage.
Yeah.
And
I've went through some stuff, you know what I mean? But for me, love always wins. And I made a commitment that I only planned on ever getting married once, and I planned on zero divorces.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, divorce is not an option. It's not something that can even be entertained. Yeah, things are going to be tough. We're going to hate each other sometimes. We're going to fight. We're not going to want to be together.
Mm-hmm.
But we both made a commitment to be together forever. I told my dad, I remember talking to my dad one day, and I told him I wasn't looking for somebody to live with. I was looking for somebody I wanted to die with. And that is I plan on that being the person holding my hand when I die.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I married her. Not because I was looking for somebody I wanted to spend my life with. No, I'm looking for somebody that on my last day, there's nobody else I want there other than that person. I found her. That's who's going to be there. You know what I mean?
So good.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I think that this is a perfect segue into, we get to talk to Heather next week.
Yeah.
Which is going to be cool because it's going to be totally different.
Yeah, no, she comes from a different walk. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's going to be fun though.
Yeah.
I'm kind of looking forward to it, but, also I don't want to cut you off
and
I want to make sure that you have shared all of the things and you feel good about your story and what you've,
I do. I feel really good about that. Like compared to our last take where, it wasn't my favorite one, I feel like I've done a lot better on this one. Yeah. Other than live your life, enjoy it, love people, work.
Yeah.
Work your ass off because it's not easy, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you haven't found God, find him. He's out there looking for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can't find him. He's waiting for you.
It's cool.
Go find him.
Cool. Yeah. And on that, I think that we close it out and we say this has been an episode of Small Town Expectations. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Peace.